And the prayer is a prayer that is said daily, because there is so much around us that is not in balance anymore in this world that we live in. And so we always need to seek that balance that was given to us as we live as two-legged, sharing a world with the winged, the things that crawl under the earth, on the earth, the things that grow, the things that help us, the things that are out among us. So let's say that again. Matakwiasan. And we say that to each one of you as you've come to share that with us today. Who would like to begin first?
Stand up.
Yeah, stand up. Good.
Ow!
Go one down the line
back and forth. Okay, I'll say I go. I'm going to start with this one because it relates to one or two of the others that I have here. Have you worked with Matthew Fox? What's the real problem with the church that will not allow his views? I not only work with him, I work for him. I'm in the Institute of Creation-Centered Spirituality, and I've known Matt for many years. First, if you're too prophetic, you're in trouble wherever you are. Matt Fox is prophetic. And in any one of our groups, wherever we're working with anybody prophetic, it becomes threatening. It becomes dangerous to somebody else who can't, Elizabeth made a special point of that too, who can't receive these ideas. I'll tell you from personal knowledge of Matthew Fox and of friendship with him and with his mother, who calls me periodically and says, keep him in shape, keep him in shape. I said, I'm not his mother, I'm just his big sis. But the problem that I have seen it, his own Dominican theologian, provincials in general, have examined his theology and cannot find anything unorthodox in his theology. The problem with Matthew Fox and the Catholic Church is his insistence that women should be strong and recognized and ordained. And this is something the Pope has spoken out against and has warned him about, and he will not shut up about it. And that was the reason for his silencing, and politics is the reason for his severance from the Dominican order, not the priesthood, but the Dominican order. So I just have to say, and someone else mentioned, creation spirituality, and I'll let you pick this up, why is it the Catholic Church has so much trouble relating to this? Pick it up.
Part of the answer is that the clergy, the hierarchy, have invested so much in power over salvation. And are not prepared to countenance any approach to God which does not require their services.
And I'd just like to kind of, you know, we can't answer each one of these thoroughly, but we'll try to kind of give a light along the way that'll provoke your meditation.
Go ahead, Lisa. Give us two specific, examples of what could should be given up. Be specific. One, racism, and two, homophobia. I'll be more specific than that. How many of you have actually talked with girls under the age of 12 about the specifics of the erotic pleasure of their bodies? I want to see hands. Okay. Would you talk to those who didn't raise their hands? What is it that they might give up? The comfort of silence? The comfort of ambivalence about our own bodies? However, I don't have all the answers for the reasons for this not having talked, but you do. And how about talking about the well, I'm not saying that out loud. She suggested that in certain areas of the globe, there's a certain reticence about something. So that, yes, that's what she said.
I wonder where.
But I think that we have to acknowledge that. What kind of theology do you produce if you hardly ever see the sunshine for 6 months out of the year? Do you produce a wildly flesh-affirming theology? No. You don't. And I'm not saying that people who see the sunshine will necessarily do that, but you can correlate the constraints on orthodoxy with how people sit in their bodies. And
how much clothing they
sit in. If you could see your bodies right now, you would know exactly what I mean. I don't want to say simply sexuality. I really want to underline. There is in this country a growing racism that if the church doesn't name and fight explicitly, it will be understood to approve by default. And you can name how you give that up. You know specifically those of you who are privileged by white racism. You know already what you have to give up.
Okay, I'll pick this up. Are we taking from floor two now?
I don't know why not. I think we've got a pretty...
It's easy for me to sit here. I'm repeating it so they can hear it.
Okay.
And say I have given up
racism
and homophobia.
In my heart of hearts.
In my heart of hearts.
I know I have not.
I know I have not.
And so I cannot say this is what I will give up. It will be a giving up process.
Cannot say I will give it up, but it will be a process.
Yeah. And it may never end.
And it may never end.
Great. Terrific.
Just rolling with that too, if you don't come out of any tradition that initiates woman into being woman and initiates a man into being man, you're way back. The closest thing this society has is a driver's license, for God's sake. What's that going to teach you about your sexuality except score and drink? Mm-hmm. That's about it in this society. I was initiated because I come from a society that the churches have almost killed. And that is matriarchal, matrilineal societies run by women, taught by women, and directed by women. And they're far stronger. At least 500 of the tribes in this country a few hundred years ago were half matriarchal, matrilineal. But you bring in a patriarchal mentality and a church system that's patriarchal, and we hardly stood a chance. We survived because we cut ourselves off from Christianity. In your opinion, when and how is it appropriate to apprentice oneself to other traditions? How can you be a Catholic and a Christian and hang with your native tradition? Through freedom. My mother transformed the Catholic Church 40 years before Vatican got ever around to it. It's appropriate when you learn the strength of your own tradition and what is life-giving to you from your own tradition, and then in that freedom, always reevaluating it, sharing it with others, you begin to explore. If something makes you nervous, don't go for it yet. Hang around with a few people who aren't nervous yet, and then maybe you won't be so nervous in 10 years. But see, the appropriate part is you apprentice yourself to knowledge, to truth, not to necessarily joining the Wiccan tradition or anything else, you see. That's where you have to get your own freedom and discuss it with exactly the quality of woman and man we've got in this room. You've got to share these with other people and explore them.
We're
picking up on each other. Is that okay?
Yeah, I'd like to come in on that because I have a question here about what's my sense of the damage to the Celtic earth goddesses done by Christianity during the Middle Ages. Well, interestingly enough, depending on where you are, the Celtic earth goddesses, in a real sense, went underground, but they were also absorbed into the Christian tradition among the 10,000 Irish saints.
Right.
They have some of the most wonderful names you ever heard of, like Moling and Munchen and so on and so on. Every place has its patron saint. What happened was that the when the, St. Patrick or whichever of the five of them it was who came, or whoever, the native peoples really baptized their own tribal gods and goddesses and just put ST in front of them. and that's how we have 10,000 Irish saints. But now there's an important point here, and that is, I think, I am, and this, there's another question here, more or less on the same line. I'm often asked, do I call myself a Christian? Or an even more difficult one, do I call myself a Roman Catholic? I always say I am an Irish Catholic. But but in sheer sort of desperation one day, I said, look, I'm a recycled Catholic. and this is really true. I find that, you know, when you really become aware of the natural processes, what creation actually is, and how it's perceived now by science, by the natural sciences, you realize that all these kind of processes that are going on, and we just keep them apart from our own lives, and we keep on talking about ourselves in ways as though we have nothing to do with what happens, all the matter in the world. So everything in the world is recycled. So I am being continually recycled, and every bit of me is being continually recycled. And I find that over and over again, I hadn't thought about that poem, literally, for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Out it came. And this is, I think, one of the mysteries of creation. Mm-hmm. We are continually recycling. And there are times when it is appropriate for some particular piece of matter to rise to the surface. And there are times when it is also fruitful to do some digging.
I want to pick up on that theme of recycling. Somebody asked, is your creation out of good-for-nothing stuff just more theology of the cross? Bits and pieces equal suffering. I really want to... I don't care if it's theology of the cross or not. If you want to call it that, that's fine with me. But what I want to make clear is that it doesn't... It's a very different interpretation from the theology of the cross, which says if you're having a nice life, you ought to go out and find some suffering. What I'm saying is, if you are about the task of creating as a woman in this society, and you aren't already suffering, you don't know what's going on. This is not optional suffering, and you get points if you choose it. This is saying the vast majority of women on the planet don't have that option. The vast majority of the women on the planet aren't in this room. We are. And for many in this room, if it's an option, well, take it, for heaven's sake. If you have a choice as to suffer or not, then that's a real choice. Are you going to suffer for justice for women or not? And that's a choice that you can make. And if you want to call it then the theology of the cross, fine. But the point is not whether it's called theology of the cross or theology of God of the rags. The point is, can we as women create together justice for women? That's the question. And if we do that, we're going to suffer. That we can count on. So we don't have to try to legitimate the suffering. We just have to recognize it when it comes along and hope that we're in the kitchen together. Somebody making coffee while somebody's sharpening the scissors, because the suffering is going to hurt. And if we're in it together, rather than creating ex nihilo as isolate queens in our particular ordained system or seminary or job, if we're in it together, we might have a fighting chance. That was simply, I think, my point.
Well, I think that's true, too, and do we have a little more time? Oh, okay. I think that's true, too, and someone asked me, is not space a luxury that only a small minority in this world enjoy? What is this connectedness? What does it mean when you've got somebody in an overcrowded slum here, Washington, D.C., or whatever? I'd like to just come back to that and say that in 1643, one of the early country leaders wrote to the leaders and said, "I do not believe we will ever civilize these Indians because we cannot convince them to own the land." Own the land. Then I want to say to you that as a Native American whose reservation was raided 4 times and on whose land Attica prison was built, because no non-Indians wanted that near them, so they took our land for it, I want to tell you that we have a private joke about all the people in this country who love the sign that says private property, who love the sign that says no trespassing. What a joke to every Native American, you know. That's true. So you need to get a different perspective on space. I have to teach Native children, even on a reservation where there's a lot of physical space, but no resources left because everybody's ripped them off. No space to build a different kind of life. No way to recreate. I have to teach them
their right to a territorial imperative, that they have a right to a place on this earth and everybody else can't walk into it and trespass it. But this also relates to what Anne was talking about today, the male interpretation of what do we do with overpopulation? We're the producers physically, we're the sufferers physically, spiritually, psychically, aren't we? We're the ones who come down to it. And so I say, in terms of this space, I do everything I can wherever I am to call us as women and men to a recreative space from within. But that space from within is what gives us the courage and the liberation to make that space from without change for other people. I won't tolerate certain things in a neighborhood that I live in a classroom that I teach in a school that I'm connected with, and in an airplane. And in an airplane. You know, one of my degrees is limited space engineering. And that has to do with this very problem. It isn't. I can't really run down to San Paulo and change that situation. But we're working on big peace and justice issues. We're working on racism and phobias and stuff that just squeeze somebody in. You know, I go into a room sometimes and I sit there and expand my spirit, because I see all this creepy, cringy, skinny stuff inside. All these people sitting in their little comfort zone. I steal their souls. I take their shawls. I intimidate them with a different reality. And that's, I think, see, you're in a very big question here, and we've all been on it. But by gosh, it's not simple. I crowd Washington. I crowd administration. One of the best ways I've learned, just a personal example, to crowd administration. Once I taught at UCLA in the Native American Culture Center 23 years ago, I learned a great secret. College teaching and university teaching. Never teach full time. Never teach full time if you want space. What do you get? You get a lower salary. You lose fringe benefits. You get fewer increments. You don't have a chance at tenure, but by God, you got a free voice.
Amen.
When you're part-time. And you just skip the darn stupid faculty meetings that don't mean anything. And you get out where stuff has to be done. So there are many ways that you can create space. But my way is to shake up every single secure system that I can. And people at the faculty will say to me, "Jose, we didn't see you at the last faculty meeting." I said, "Of course not. I'm just part-time." What do you expect of anybody that's part-time? That's drawing on a Franciscan heritage of freedom to go in and mess it up, hit and run. That's what it's called. We've got about 10 more minutes, I think.
There are two questions here which I can answer very fast. Someone asked, as we unravel the creation story, we're challenged to save the earth and its place in the cosmos. I would just like to amend that. We are not saving the earth. We are saving the human habitat. I mean, let's get that bit of arrogance out up front. We are not either destroying or saving the planet. We are saving the human or destroying the human habitat. Now, what do you do about this? That will depend on your own personal space. The frontier is long. Wherever you are, do what you can, whether it's on an airplane or wherever.
Pick a turf.
Now. So now somebody asked, what can we do to help the poorer, who wants all the solidarity that we can offer her? I have the address of the Friends of Trey Quat Sound. If you want to write to them and say, what can we do to support you? So if you just take this address, because I don't know what stage the campaign is at the moment. I know they are bringing the stump of one of these primeval forest trees right across Canada. It was in Toronto last week. But they're, you know, they need all the support they can get. Friends of Clay Quat Sound, and that is C-L-A-Y-O-Q-U-O-T.
Again.
Friends of Clay Quat Sound. Spell it again. Clay, sorry. C-L-A-Y-O-Q-U-O-T. Sorry about my Irish accent. I know I have great problems with this in England, really. Honestly, I do. Yeah. Friends of Clay Quat Sound, Box 489. Tofino, T-O-F-I-N-O, B.C., that's British Columbia, Canada, and the postcode is V-O-V-0-R. Now that's where I really run into
R.
R.
V as in victory.
Now I know what it's like to be a minority.
V-0-R. Yeah, oh, 0-R. Or as in Robert. It's... V is in victory, O is in office, R is in ready,
and is this a Z?
Yep.
Z as in zero.
That's a two.
No, okay, two as in 1-2. Z as in zero, O as in office, or whatever. Okay. if you didn't get it, I got it.
Yeah. Maybe we can put it on the overhead, and in case you didn't get it, we'll write it on there. Yeah. I just would like to say that I have to catch a cab to do something else at 3:30, and I don't want to give any impression that I'm not hanging around here. Kwok Pwilan from the Episcopal Divinity School and I will tomorrow do a workshop on feminist teaching issues, and there will be time there for conversing, or if you just want to give me a call, leave a message over at the Hyatt, because I really do want to continue the conversation, so I'm not running off. And I hope that you'll stop by the Women's Theological Center exhibit out there. If you really want to know some more about the specifics, we've got a lot of material there that will be of a lot of help. So I think for all of us, I say thanks, and Marlene has the mic.
Let's express our joy as we thank these wonderful women.